Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're focusing on the precious metals, gold and silver, in terms of what is driving these prices higher and holding them up generally at higher levels, especially for gold that continues to hang around that $2,400 level, and silver that recently made a run to pretty much $30 and has backed off a little bit. We're chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. Jeff, big picture here, what are the drivers in your eyes that are pushing gold higher when we look around the markets? We see higher interest rates. That's usually a hamper on the gold price. Dollar, generally higher. That's usually a hamper too. But we have inflation. That's staying high. And there does seem to be a lot of money rotating within the markets. And it seems like it's moving into commodities broadly. So what are the main factors in your eyes holding gold and silver up at these generally higher prices?
You know, it's strong economic activity and high interest rates. You know, there are a couple things that people believe about gold that are simply wrong. One is that higher interest rates necessarily are negative for gold, and one is that a stronger dollar, that dollar and gold move in opposite directions. What you're seeing right now is very similar to what you saw in late 1979, well, really across 1979, and again in 2007, 2008. You're seeing a strong dollar and strong gold prices. And the reason for that is that you have investors around the world interested in reducing their risk and their counterparty risk. And when investors around the world say, how do I reduce my financial and political risk? The two assets that they like the most are gold and silver on the one, three assets, gold, silver, and U.S. Treasuries. You've seen a record amount of U.S. treasuries being bought by overseas investors as well as U.S. investors. And you're seeing people buying the dollar in order to participate in order to buy those treasuries and in order to participate in the U.S. stock market and real estate market. So what you're looking at is a lot of investors who are very wealthy. Stock market's done well, real estate market's done well, the bond market's done well. There are a lot of people who feel like they have generated a tremendous amount of financial wealth over the last 2 years, but they're looking at the world and they're getting worried. And they're saying, how do I protect myself? How do I protect my wealth going forward? And the answer is I buy U.S. Treasuries, which are the least risky financial assets I can find, and I buy gold and silver. And you're seeing investors do that, as I said, around the world, demographically, geographically. It's not an Indian or a Chinese phenomenon. You're seeing strong demand from pretty much all quarters. And it reflects the fact that you do have periods of time when people run to both gold and the dollar. And while interest rates are rising, what's really important for gold is why are they rising? If interest rates are rising because people think that the monetary authorities can control inflation, which was the case in 2021, 2022, into 2023, then it's not necessarily bullish for gold. But if interest rates are rising because people think that maybe the monetary authorities don't have the control over inflationary pressures that they thought they did, then it's positive for gold. Yeah, I mean, gold went from what, $300 in September of 1979 to $850 in January of 1980, while interest rates, nominal interest rates, went from 7% to 21%. Yeah, you had a situation where investors were scared witless back then, and they moved into gold and silver big time. And you also had copper and oil and other commodity prices rising at the same time, the same way you have now. So it's concerns about persistent inflation. It's concerns about that the fact that interest rates may not decline the way some people were thinking over the last 2 or 3 years any day now, but rather stay high and maybe even move higher. And there's also a tremendous amount of political concerns You know, you saw a lot of buying last week as people were trying to gain what's going to happen after Israel bombed the embassy, the Iranian embassy in Syria. So, you know, Iran was saying they were going to respond. The United States government was saying to the Israeli government and everybody else, and a military response from Iran is imminent. There are people who think that the U.S. coordinated it with Iran so that Iran could show off its missile control, but the U.S. could shoot down, you know, a third of the missiles being shot, and no one gets hurt, but Iran gets to flex its muscles militarily. That's nonsense. But, you know, the reality is that you saw this coming. You have higher political risks on an international basis. You have higher political risks on a domestic basis in the United States and a number of other countries. And you have this whole issue of, okay, I've done really well in stocks and bonds and real estate. Where do I put my profits so that I don't lose them all if stocks and bonds and real estate all decline?
Yeah, Jeff, so kind of a three-way factor here, a store of value to store the wealth that's been made, concerns about inflation maybe not being as under control by the central banks, and then also the geopolitical risks. I want to circle around to something you mentioned there in passing, though, in that answer, and that was that it's not just a move to the east. We see a lot of articles in the financial media. We see a lot of articles in the gold community talking about it being a shift from the west to the east in the buying, and that it's moving from London to Shanghai. The Shanghai Exchange is going to be the center of gravity. And you made the point to us off mic that that's just not the case, that you're really seeing buying across the board all over the world. I'd love you to expand on that point.
Yeah, there are two things there. And the first thing I would say is there is some truth to the fact that power is shifting to the east and Shanghai is gaining power in terms of the precious metals markets. And we even, 10 years ago, we advised the World Gold Council that they should move their headquarters to Shanghai. They didn't think that that was a nice thing to say. You know, not a lot of British people want to live in Shanghai, but that's beside the point. There is growing economic power in Asia, in China, in India, and in other countries. But what we're seeing now, like in the first 4 months of this year, is you're seeing strong demand for gold and silver in India, in China, in Southeast Asia, in East Asia, in North America, and in Europe. You're seeing institutional investors buying into these things. You're seeing retail investors in all of those areas. The amount of gold that's being purchased in China, both by retail investors in small collectibles and medallions and bars, has been rising, but so also has been the amount of gold being bought in ETFs. Last week, when people saw, hey, the gold price has been rising since the beginning of March, it's making new records, I want to participate, the fastest way to buy exposure to gold price increases is through ETFs. So you saw a surge of demand in ETFs in the second half of March into the first half of April. And that didn't necessarily reflect a long-term shift away from the 3.5-year decline in ETF holdings. It reflected a short-term impulse to have gold price exposure. And how do I do that? What's the cheapest, quickest, easiest way to do it? By ETFs. And that's what you saw in the United States. You saw it in Europe. You saw it in Asia.
Yeah, you're right, Jeff. We have actually just seen simply higher volumes in some of these ETFs. What about historical references when we do take into account that it's a number of countries, number of different type of investors that are buying gold right now, chasing price higher? When have we seen that in history? And what does it tell us about the sustainability of this demand?
You've seen it over and over again. You saw it in 1973, 74. You saw it in 79. You saw it in 86, 87, 93, 94, and then 2002 through 2011. And in many of those cases, prices spiked sharply higher and then they came off. And sometimes, like for example, in March of 2008, the gold price went from like $800 at the beginning of 2008 to more than $1,000 the day after Bear Stearns went bust in March, but then it came back down to $900 within five trading days, $906 within five trading days, and it was back down to $850 by sometime in April. So you can see these spikes, and then the price comes off. It usually doesn't come off to where it was before. It comes off 50% or 75%, and that's a more typical thing. But, you know, I always have to caution, we're in uncharted territories in terms of financial markets and global politics and global financial and economic issues. So what we've seen in the past probably will repeat itself to some extent, but you have to be careful for the nuances and the important changes that have occurred in the financial system since the previous time. But yeah, it's not unusual that you see during a bull market in gold, prices spike up, and then they give it up, a lot of it up. And you may see that again over the next 3 or 4 or 5 months before prices start moving up again, in our view, to new highs.
Well, Jeff, let's also bring silver into the discussion here, because one of the things we've heard over and over again the last 2 years is that the only reason gold's going up is because of central banks buying it. As you've outlined here, there's a lot of reasons for investors to be buying gold besides just central banks. But central banks don't buy silver, and they don't buy gold and silver stocks. And even the gold and silver stocks have had some life, but silver's had a nice jump. And some of the people have postulated that gold getting higher and higher in price, some investors are moving over to silver. Anyway, you slice it, silver's had a nice move. How are you looking at the price moves in silver?
Well, yeah, silver's had a good move. Silver suffered in 2022 and 2023 by sort of like a backwash from a lot of people who chased the silver price higher in the second half of 2020 and then in 2021. You know, you had that Wall Street silver scam going on. You had the drain the COMEX stock scam going on. And a lot of people chased the price higher. And you know, the price of silver went from like $15 to $30. And there were a lot of people who bought $28, $29, $30, and even higher, like $32, $33 on that spike in 2021. They've been selling over the course of 2022, 2023, and there's been a lot of disenchantment. That disenchantment seems to have been digested by the market now, and you have a market that where you have new investors coming back in. You have other investors who were disposing of silver that they had bought above $28 who have now stopped selling silver because they the silver price is rising. So, hey, before I sell any more silver at $25, $26 an ounce, let's see how high it goes. Yeah, it was very funny because one of these guys on the internet, he doesn't know what he's talking about, but he talks about gold and silver all the time. And he had somebody who was in the business, well, I won't name, in 1979. And he was talking about, well, it must have been really great selling all that gold and silver in 1979 as the price of silver went from $5 to $50 and gold went from $190 to $850. And the veteran who lived through that period said, yeah, it was good, but you know, I made my money buying gold and silver off of investors and people who had silverware and silver jewelry and gold jewelry as the price rose. He said, you know, I made a lot of money selling metal to investors who were bidding the price higher, but I made much more money buying this stuff back at a discount to the market from other people who were sitting on it. And you've seen that in silver over the last couple of years, and you're probably seeing it now too, where there are any number of people who had bought silver at $30, $32 an ounce in 2021 saying, let me wait until I see the price peaking again before I resume disposing of this metal that I've been selling at a loss over the last 2 years.
Jeff, what about the whole argument that the world's running out of silver? That's going to drive prices higher. Even that argument that it costs more to mine silver, so prices need to move up to encourage mining. Do either of these have an impact on price?
Yeah, silver producers, first off, 80% of the silver is made as a byproduct. So its cost of production is roughly $1 or $2 an ounce. Once you get the gold, the copper, the lead, and zinc out, you've got this tank house slimes that have silver in it, and the cost of recovering the silver at that point is like $1 or $2 an ounce. So that's one issue. And then you have the other 20% that comes from primary silver mines. And those guys, you know, last year they had a 29% profit margin on an all-in sustaining basis. So, you know, Goldman Sachs reported its first quarter earnings this week, and they had a 28% profit margin. Silver mining has a profit margin equivalent to Goldman Sachs. You know, and all these people hate Goldman Sachs for being so damn profitable. They must be doing something wrong. But the reality is that the silver and mining industry has a good profit margin compared to Goldman Sachs and other well-run financial institutions that know what they're doing. So, the cost structure is not necessarily there. There are a lot of other problems. The Mexican government is coming up with all kinds of proposals that are very detrimental to capital formation and mining. And it's not just the Mexican government. Other governments are doing that. There are problems restraining silver mine production. They're not geological. They're man-made, you know, and it's there. The silver market has not been in a deficit. It's been in a surplus. You know, our video that we'll do Friday is actually talking about there's no silver shortage. We've been in a surplus in terms of newly refined silver bullion entering the market relative to fabrication demand. We've been in a surplus for 18 years. Now, the surplus had contracted sharply last year and is probably contracting even more sharply this year, but it will turn, it has the capacity to turn itself around if it does. But, you know, we're not running these massive deficits of production, refined production relative to fabrication demand. And we have a record amount of 5.5 billion ounces of silver in above ground inventories, mostly held by investors. Now, those investors, many say, well, I'll never sell, but, you know, their children say, we'll sell when you're dead. But at certain prices, again, as we saw in 1979, at certain prices, people will take their profit. Maybe not everybody, but you'll see it. I think in 1979, 1980, in the gold and silver markets, you had probably less than 10% of the gold and silver that was stacked up in above ground inventories sold by those investors. But it was still an enormous amount of metal. A couple hundred million ounces of silver in coinage and jewelry and decorative objects were refined into bullion in that period, 1979, 1980. In the gold market in 1979, you had more gold jewelry melted down and refined into refined bullion than you had gold used in the manufacture of jewelry. I was relatively new to the business, and the veteran observers of the gold market were talking about negative jewelry demand. And we said, what do you mean? She said, well, the jewelry industry refined more silver than it used, or gold, than it used in 1979. So you do have this enormous amount of metal. There's a gruesome misunderstanding. And part of it is that some observers look at what is reported in terms of silver inventory. So there's a report out that looks primarily at the LBMA registered inventories. It ignores the fact that there's been a lot of depositories built just outside of the London reporting capture area. There's a lot of silver and gold that is stored that away from London, within the UK, that doesn't get reported. There are hundreds of millions of ounces of gold and silver that is stored in Switzerland that doesn't get reported to anyone. And if you look at North America, you've seen probably our estimate is more than a quadrupling in the amount of silver depository capacity in the United States over the last two decades. Most of that was not in the COMEX capture area, or even if it was, it wasn't necessarily owned by depository managers who registered to be COMEX depositories. And you've seen these silver depositories build, you know, established silver depositories and new guys build a depository to double their capacity to store silver. And by the time it's done, they're building a third depository to increase their capacity again. And now they're building a fourth one or a fifth one. A lot of that's out in Nevada and Los Angeles and Idaho. It's not in the COMEX capture area. A lot of it's in Florida, where you have this tremendous amount of precious metals coming into the United States. Some of it is within the COMEX capture area, but again, you know, the guys just don't register to be COMEX registered depositories because they're dealing with mining companies and refineries and industrial users and companies that supply them. And that metal comes in and then it goes out to the fabricators. So, you know, you've got depositories at JFK that are new, that have doubled the capacity or more to hold silver there, but they're not necessarily silver that gets reported to the COMEX because those guys have no financial interest in being COMEX registered inventory depositories. They're bringing in material from physical producers and they're shipping it out to fabricators. They don't need the COMEX registration. When they start becoming registered, that's when you have to worry about the future of gold and silver prices, because the same thing with refineries. There used to be, there still are, enormous numbers of refineries that are not registered as good delivery refineries of gold and silver. And for many years, they said, we don't need that. We don't need the expenses and the hassles of becoming London or COMEX registered refineries, because we sell all of our metal in sponge form, in powder form, to industrial users or in electrode form. And around 2013, 2014, when the precious metals markets turned weak and fabrication demand was actually weaker, you saw a lot of these refineries become registered with COMEX and London. And the reason they were doing that was because they had excess capacity. They couldn't sell all of their material directly to fabricators. So they had excess output that they needed to sell to trading companies and banks. And the trading companies and banks said, we can only buy good registered good delivery bars. So if you want to sell your excess material to us, you have to become registered with London and COMEX. And you saw a big increase in refineries around the world at that time becoming registered refiners. And if you want to know where the demand was coming from, you look at where those refineries were.
Well, Jeff, just one more question on silver. A lot of people have noted that it has that hybrid nature of being both a precious metal and an industrial manufacturing metal. We have seen a nice jump in a lot of the commodities, mostly on the idea that there's a reflationary trade and that we're not going to have that bad recession that everybody was forecasting for this year. Obviously, it hasn't come yet, but you've seen things like copper and oil pop their heads higher. Are those kind of movements in the commodities also giving silver a boost?
Yes. I mean, you've seen over the last month or so, you've seen more than $1 billion worth of investments into commodity index funds. And, you know, those commodity index funds typically will have like 35 or 40 or 45% of their assets in oil, but they'll also have copper and they'll have silver. Silver might be only like 1% or 2% of that fund, depending on what the index is that they're using or that they've constructed for their fund. But you are seeing a broad-based interest in commodities on the part of investors, and some of that is spilling over into gold and silver.
All right, Jeff, thank you very much for your time and outlining kind of where you see this demand coming from, some historical references, a lot of good information on the metals, gold and silver, and some of the background data that a lot of people point to, sometimes don't totally understand. Plus, it can be hard to filter through some of that. But overall, seeing more demand from a number of different areas and different kind of investors, that is positive for any market. It's why we've been seeing higher prices. Jeff, thank you as always for your time. I'll post a link to the CPM Group's website. We'll chat again next month. I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Take care of yourself.